Welcome to the Craig T. Owens audio blog, with Craig's blog posts in audio format to go. Craig's new book, When Sheep Bite, is available now at craigtowens.com.
A lost culture of reverence. Those who lived under a monarchy knew what it was to show reverence to their beloved king. Psalm chapter 2 is a call for us to recover that lost culture of reverence for our King of Kings. This is the first message in our new summer series looking at the royal psalms scattered throughout the Psalter. If you would like to watch the video of this sermon, I've shared that link in the show notes.
During the summer months, I like to do a series in the Psalms. The Psalms just lend themselves toward being a little bit more slow-paced. Many of them are written as songs, and as you know, I mean, you can't sing a song as fast as you would just speak the words. It's designed for you to hold out various phrases and words for that emphasis. Many of these psalms were written as prayers, and prayers invite a conversation. It invite time for us to speak and time for us to be quiet and listen. Some of the psalms that we've looked at before even have that word in there, Selah, that means, hey, pause. What you just read here is so powerful. Don't rush past this. Selah, pause for just a second. And, you know, the summer months with, you know, I think there just being more daylight for things to get done and nicer weather where we can be outside, it just, the summer months sort of lend themselves to a time of a little bit more relaxed schedule. And I think stepping into the Psalms and looking at these Psalms in a slower pace is just sort of fits with the season. There is a series of Psalms that run throughout the whole Psalter, and they are regal. They're royal Psalms. They are Psalms that talk about the king on his throne, the beauty of the king on his throne, the power of the king on his throne, and what people can expect from his reign. And ultimately, these psalms are all pointing to the King of Kings on his eternal throne that sit there forever. They are called the royal psalms. And we have to have a point of reference. Whenever we're learning something new, you have to have something that you can attach it to. I learned a word from Betsy as the teacher that it's called schema. It's the, what are you going to build on? When you get ready to teach kids in a classroom something new, what do you relate it to? What do they already know that you can say, okay, so now let me take this and go a little bit farther. For many of the psalmists, what they knew was a king that sat on the royal throne in Jerusalem. And in the book of Psalms, that king almost always turns out to be David. He was the one that they knew that he was God's anointed one. They knew the promises that God had made and given to David about his reign extending beyond his lifetime, beyond the lifetime of even his children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, that it was going to extend all the way to King Jesus, who would reign forever and forever. But many of these psalms, they have to have that schema. They got to have something to build on. And so they say, hey, look at David. Let's look at David. Let's look at his reign. And we can use that then as an understanding of the eternal kingdom, because they knew what God had said about David when he first came to the throne. The reason why he was there is God says, the Lord has sought out a man after his own heart and appointed him ruler of his people. So when they saw David on the throne, they said, David's not here because he schemed to get here. He's here because God said, I see in him my heart, and the promise I'm going to give to him, you were going to see it ultimately fulfilled. Even David, with all of his, I mean, he was human. He had his foibles, his mistakes, his sins, his shortcomings, but they could still see his heart. In fact, it was so obvious what his heart was that David became the standard for every other king. Now, as I mentioned, if you go through the Psalter, the 150 Psalms that are here, you will see David's name in here. Obviously, he wrote a lot of these songs. You'll see other songs that are written for him or about him. And you'll see his son Solomon named in here, but you don't see any other kings listed in the Psalter. But when you go to the history books, when you read the history about the kings, you see a lot of their names, but they're almost always attached with David. For instance, you see about Asa, that he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. By what standard? As his father David had done. Or you see a king that kind of got it and kind of not. Amaziah did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, but not as his father David had done. He was doing the right thing, but he didn't quite measure up to that standard. And then you see other kings, says that unlike David, his father Ahaz did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Now, in every one of these cases, it says father, but they're not talking about biological father. In many cases, they're looking back multiple generations, but that David is still the one that's setting the pace, setting the tone, setting the standard that everybody else is supposed to live up to. And so when we come to these regal psalms, these royal psalms, as we go through this whole collection of them scattered throughout the Psalter, you're going to see that many of them are going to mention David by name, or it's going to be David himself that's writing. But what we want to watch for as we go through this is to see, yes, we're looking at David as the standard of what God wants to do, but we're looking past that. Just like these kings are going back generations to look to David, we're now looking forward all the way to see the King of Kings reigning forever, undisputed, unrivaled on his throne for all of eternity. And that's what these psalms show us. Now, we don't have to go very far in these psalms. Really, the very first psalm is an introduction, kind of gives you an idea of what you're going to experience in the next 149 psalms. But we get to Psalm number 2, the second one that's providentially placed here in this order. This is our first royal regal psalm that we come to. Now, we've got to understand our schema, okay? We don't know what it is here in America to bow to a king, to give allegiance to a king. In fact, we're the exact opposite, right? We're Americans. Land of the free. We don't bow our knee to any king. And so we need to understand a little bit, just like these Israelites would say, well, in order for me to see the eternal King of Kings, let me look at David, man after God's own heart. Let me try to understand, what are we going to do? What are we going to look at? Because we don't really have that understanding. What are we going to look at as a king? Well, I think we can start with our own form of government that we're in right now. Our democratic republic that was established with our Constitution and our founding documents. There was a lady that asked Benjamin Franklin right after the Constitution was adopted. She said, well, doctor, what have we got? A republic or a monarchy? And his response was this: a republic, if you can keep it. If you can keep it. Let me read for you one of the things at that Constitutional Congress. Now, Benjamin Franklin voted for this, but he also wanted to share some warnings right up front. And here's how he addressed the chair and the people that were there. He said, in these sentiments, sir, I agree to this Constitution with all its faults, if they are such, because I think a general government necessary for us, and there is no form of government but what may be a blessing to the people if well administered. And I believe further that this is likely to be well administered for a course of years, but it can only end in despotism, as other forms of government have done before it, when the people become so corrupted as to need a despotic government. What he's saying here is that there needs to be a level of respect that we have even for the laws that are there, even if we don't fully agree with them. But we've seen an eroding of that respect, haven't we? And I think that it traces back to an eroding of our reverence for the King of Kings I think they go hand in hand. Because look at what Benjamin Franklin also said. Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters. If we don't begin to recognize the level of respect that we need to have for the government that we do have, that's going to erode, it's going to undermine the reverence that we have for the King of Kings, and vice versa. The more reverence we have for the King of Kings, the more respect we can have for people in offices of government now. Because Daniel, who served the most powerful kings in both the Babylonian, the Mede, and the Persian empires, he says multiple times to them, the Most High is sovereign, and he gives the nations to whom he desires. The kings, the rulers that were in place are there because God put them there. And what we've seen in our culture, we've sort of a lost culture of reverence, of respect. Because what we see now is phrases like, that's not my fill in the blank governor. That's not my president. That's not the one that I voted for. And it's a disrespect that is eroding. We don't have this kind of thing. And I would submit, friends, that we would do well to learn the lessons from these royal songs, that we need to not be, we're Americans, we don't bow our knee to anybody. We need to bow our knee to the King of Kings and understand how reverential that needs to be. And from that, when we see our King more clearly, I think from that will naturally flow the respect that other people deserve. Think about, you got people like Peter and Paul, who are going to be martyred at the hands of a Roman emperor. When in their letters to the New Testament church, they didn't say, guys, let's get them. Not my emperor, not the government I would have picked. What do they say? These men are servants that God has placed here. And he said, our responsibility, both of them said, our responsibility is to pray for them. Paul went so far to say, give respect to those that have that are owed the respect. But that comes from our reverence. And so this first royal psalm that we look at is a stark contrast between humans trying to do it their way and us bowing our knee and reverencing God, who's ultimately in control. Because look how this psalm, the second psalm, starts off. It's asking a question. Why do the nations conspire? Why do they conspire? Now, this word in the Hebrew means not conspiring like I'm just sitting here pondering and thinking about something that I can do. This means an angry verbal outburst. I'm mad at this. I don't like this. I want to change this. You guys don't know what you're doing, and it should be. Okay, it's angry. It's verbal. It's stirring up more anger there. Why do the nations conspire and the people's plot? I like the Amplified version puts in their scheme and plot. Then you could see them just kind of like, how are we going to work this thing out? And then it starts telling us in verse number 2 that the kings of the earth, they take their stand. The rulers, the leaders in the countries, they gather together. Everybody's trying to form their little coalition. Hey, are you with me? Are you against me? Are you on my side? Are we on the same team? You know, you see it in the Old Testament that one king will say, hey, I know you're kind of allied with them, but if I give you enough money, would you break your treaty with them and then side with me and then we'll go attack them together? Isn't that what we still see today in the schemes and the plots that people make? Oh, well, you're the enemy of my enemy, so that means you and I can be friends on this part. Let's join together. Or we say, oh, you're from that group. I don't even want to listen to you. I don't even want to hang out with you. That's exactly what is being described here in Psalm chapter 2. That's why I love the phrase, you guys probably heard me say it before, that in times like these, it's important to remember that there have always been times like these. What we're living in today is not current events. It's already been done before. The Bible's already talked about it. And in most cases, the Bible's already told us how it's going to fail, how it's going to fall apart. Why do we want to jump on that bandwagon now? Why do we want to be a part of that? But here's the psalmist saying they're conspiring, they're scheming, they're plotting, they're taking their stand, they're gathering together. And verse number 3, we see their words. What do they want to do? Well, it's kind of like what I said earlier about us. We are Americans. We're fiercely independent. We'll never bow our knee. That's what they're saying. Let us break their chains, throw off their fetters. We're not following your rules anymore. We're gonna do things our way. We know best. Now, who are they doing this against? It says that they're conspiring and plotting, taking their stand and gathering together against the Lord, Jehovah. Notice that word's in all caps. That's where that word Jehovah would be, Yahweh, and against his anointed one, the Messiah, the Christ, the King of Kings. This is who you're going to conspire against? Well, no wonder it says in verse number 1 that the conspiring and scheming and plotting is all in vain. It's not going anywhere. It's a complete non-starter. So why are you putting your eggs in that basket? Why are you hitching your wagon to that line of thought? Why are you rallying to that person? Look how God responds. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. He's like, yeah, you think those plans are going to work? And he scoffs. Go ahead, try it. See what that gets you. And he rebukes them in his anger. And he terrifies them in his wrath. Now, God's mercy, his blessings, they flow to us continually. They are always flowing. I mean, all you have to do to know that is take a breath. The very breath in your lungs is God's blessing to you. Look outside at the sunshine, the plants that are growing, the water from the sky that has watered them. These are all God's blessings. God's blessings flow continually. However, it says here that he terrifies them in his wrath. There is a day of punishment that is coming. God's blessings flow. His judgment is on a really stiff safety. But there is a day coming that it's going to be released. The one in heaven, he laughs, he scoffs, and every once in a while, when the world sees just a glimpse of his power, of his judgment, of something that is unstoppable by human hands, what usually happens in the few days and weeks after that? People flock to the churches, don't they? When all of a sudden they realize, hey, we're not in control. We can't stop that. And then as soon as the moment passes, okay, dodge that one. Now we can just go back to life as usual. We can go back to conspiring and plotting and scheming and taking our stand and figuring out all of our plans. And God continues to laugh and scoff. Where are your plans going to go? Because look what God says. And notice that there's not any like hesitation, like I'm hoping this works out. I have installed my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will proclaim the decree of the Lord. So not any like hesitation here, like I'm trying to figure out when the right time's going to be and if I can work this out and maybe who do I need to take a stand with? Who do I need to? No, he says, I've already got the plan. I knew the plan from before the beginning and I told you what the plan was going to be. And so I'm just working this plan out. Now, here's the spot where this unknown anonymous psalmist that wrote this second psalm, it probably has King David in mind as he's writing these words because they sound a lot like the words that God said to David when he put David on the throne. But ultimately, these are words that are spoken to and fulfilled in Jesus, the eternal King. He said to me, so we could say Jehovah said to the Messiah, the anointed one, you are my son. Today I have become your father. Ask of me, and now notice that again, God doing his will, I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth, your possession. You will rule them with an iron scepter. You will dash them to pieces like pottery. God says, I know what I'm doing, what I was doing all along. When Paul is in one of his sermons in the book of Acts, he goes back to this second psalm to make it clear that this psalm is talking about Jesus. In Acts 13, we tell you the good news. What God promised our ancestors, he has fulfilled for us, their children, by raising up Jesus, as it is written in the second psalm, these verses we just read. You are my son. Today, I have become your father. He said, let me make it clear that what this psalmist was talking about was Jesus. He wasn't just talking about David. He was talking about how Jesus was going to fulfill this. In fact, we hear God's own voice saying this. The voice from heaven said, this is my son whom I love. With him, I am well pleased. Today, you are my son. I've become your father. You are working out. You're the completion to all of the plans that I have already laid out, that he was there for this. When Jesus died on the cross and was resurrected back to life, when he submitted himself to the Father's plan, remember before that, he said, Father, so this isn't what I want. It's what you want, what your will is. And so I bow my knee to this. I submit to this. Well, then look at the therefore in Philippians 2:9. God exalted him, Jesus, to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name. That at the name of Jesus, how many knees? Every knee should bow in heaven on and on earth and under the earth. And which tongues? Every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Now, in that Psalm chapter 2, we see where God is telling him about the final judgment and how everything's going to be poured out. In Psalm 18, a psalm that King David did write himself, listen to what he said. I pursued my enemies and overtook them. I did not turn back till they were destroyed. I crushed them so that they could not rise. They fell beneath my feet. You, speaking to his father, armed me with strength for battle. You made my adversaries bow at my feet. You made my enemies turn their backs in flight, and I destroyed my foes. There, it is an irresistible king. Nobody can avoid him. Nobody can dodge him. Nobody can work their way out from underneath his absolute rule. And we see the picture of what is coming, but we also, what these royal psalms are pointing us to is the way that we should be living right now. So just like we see in Philippians chapter 2, therefore, so here's what God did for Jesus. What's it there for? Well, because Jesus submitted himself, therefore God exalted him. Well, look at Psalm chapter 2. There's also a therefore. After we look at people that are conspiring and plotting and scheming and taking their stand and saying, we're going to throw off all these rules and we're going to do things our way. And God says, no, you're rebelling against me and my plan will stand. Well, so how are we supposed to live? Well, verse number 10, therefore, this is what how we are going to live from here going forward. First thing he tells us, be wise. Be wise. Now, to me, like I said before, in verse number 1, that where that word conspire means that not only, it's not just in your heart and your mind, but it's become verbal as well. Be wise about what you're saying. Be wise about what you're thinking. Be wise about the way that you are getting nervous. Oh, man, look at how bad things are. Maybe I need to help God out here. Be wise about that. He says, therefore, you kings, you people that think that you're in charge of anything, be wise. Be thinking about this. Secondly, he tells us, be warned. Go and look at the scripture and see what the end result is. And it's an unavoidable end. We either end up in God's presence forever and ever or separated from God's presence forever and ever. There is no middle ground. There's no, well, maybe I can figure out how to. No, you can't. So be warned, you rulers of the earth. And then he says, serve the Lord with fear. Serve the Lord with reverence. Serve the Lord with the reverence that is due His name. Again, that's a difficult thing for us. We see pictures of it. I love the picture of Prince Jonathan in the Old Testament, his armor bearer. When he hears Jonathan's plan, which is really not a plan at all, he just says, you know what, Jonathan, go ahead. I'm with you. Heart and soul, I'll follow you. Or David, before he's even sitting on the throne, he's on the run from King Saul. And one time he just sighs and says, you know, the best water in the country is in the well in my hometown in Bethlehem. And three of his guys overhear him and say, we're going to go get water. They sneak out at night, get through enemy lines, and bring water back. That kind of reverence, that kind of fear, that kind of respect. And he's saying, you know, if you see that missing in your horizontal relationships with other people, maybe it's missing in your vertical relationship, your relationship with God. Serve the Lord with this reverent fear. And then he says, rejoice with trembling. Rejoice with trembling. That's kind of a weird combination, right? Rejoice, but tremble at your rejoicing. Because it's the reminder of, I'm rejoicing not because I did something. There was nothing about me that God said, oh, you're really special, so I'm going to give you a pass. You earned it and other people didn't. I am rejoicing with trembling because I say, but for the grace of God, I'm lost. So there's a rejoicing in the trembling. Now I want you to see this kind of in contrast. See it back and forth. So remember Psalm chapter 2. It's trying to, let's see the earthly kings first, the earthly plans to conspire and scheme and plot and take their stand and try to throw off all of their things. And so then what they're really saying is we're throwing off God's way. So that means we have to make our own way. We got to figure out how to do this. So I want to show you this verse from Isaiah chapter 50 out of the Amplified Version. I want you to pay attention to the emphasis here of all these people trying to do it on their own. They're trying to come up with their own thing. Behold, all you enemies of your own selves who attempt to kindle your own fires and work out your own plans of salvation, who surround and gird yourselves with momentary sparks, darts, and firebrands that you set aflame. He says, okay, walk by the light of your self-made fire and of the sparks that you have kindled for yourself, if you will. But this you shall have from my hand, this is God speaking, you shall lie down in grief and in torment. Your plan's not going to work. Now, I want you to contrast that. Rejoice in trembling. You're just going to tremble in trembling if you are a self-made person, self-made man, self-made woman. But let me go back to Philippians chapter 2. We already saw one therefore. Jesus is exalted, therefore he's exalted because he submitted to God. But now, verse number 12, there's a therefore for us. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Rejoice in your trembling. Why? Not, he says, because it's ultimately not you who works it out. It is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. So, contrast this with the beginning of Psalm chapter 2 with the conspiring and the scheming and the plotting. Do everything without complaining or arguing so that you may become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation in which you shine like stars in the universe as you hold out the word of life. You take it back to the last words of Psalm chapter 2. After we're wise and we're warned and we serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling, kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you be destroyed in your way. For his wrath can flare up in a moment, but blessed are all who take refuge in him. Friends, the consistent message in both the life of David setting the pace for us here, and in the life of the king that comes from him in Jesus, is that we bow our knee to that king, that we kiss the Son with absolute loyalty and with joyful reverence. Not because we have to do this, but we get to do this, that he made it possible, because when he came to our rescue when we had absolutely no way of rescuing ourselves. There's no way for us to earn our way into his presence. But Jesus said, in that first part of Philippians chapter 2, I'm going to take on flesh. I'm going to be made just like a servant. I'm going to die a death on the cross that I don't deserve to die, except that I'm going to be made your sin. Therefore, God exalted him, and therefore, our response is to bow our knee in joyful trembling, in fearful reverence, in this reverence that, frankly, has been lost in much of our culture. And as I said earlier, when you reverence the King of Kings, you can't help but grow in your level of respect for the flesh and blood people that are around you. Because you begin to realize, well, they might have a title. They might be a king. They might be a whatever you want to give them, whatever title you want to give them. But they're still going to have to bow their knee. They're part of the every knee that's going to bow and every tongue that's going to confess, just like my knee is going to bow and my tongue's going to confess. And I choose to do that now. And you know what? You're going to win a lot more people over by respectful treatment than you are by combative treatment or disrespectful treatment. But it's going to be awfully hard to be genuine and sincere in your respect for humans if you don't first have reverence for the king that all of us have to bow to. This is a great way for this series of psalms to start. The very first regal, royal psalm here is saying, okay, you can compare it. Look, see the way that it's gone before. The human way, God's way. It's right there. It's laid out for you. History, not only biblical history, all of world history is filled with the examples. Current events are filled with the examples. Decide. Be wise, be warned, kiss the Son, be reverent before the King of Kings, and watch and see how that changes. And as Paul says, then you become, all of us become like lights that shine in a crooked and depraved generation. We stand out from the crowd because people see the difference.
Craig's new book, When Sheep Bite, is available now. To order, go to craigtowens.com. Thank you.